irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode, Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Justin will be with us in a few minutes, and we will proceed with our show today. Well, folks, it was, what is today? December 2nd, right? And had a great Thanksgiving. I hope everybody out there had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And I'm so glad we have a special guest with us today who's going to talk about the holidays and what the holidays bring. You know, the holidays bring us blessings and joy, but they can also bring us challenges. I know, back in the day, my family put the word fun in dysfunction. So it was kind of fun to see what all would happen, what all would jump off on the holidays when we all got together. But, you know, it's also a very stressful time, a lot of time for reflection. And also for folks that are beginning their recovery, for individuals who are early in their recovery from whatever addiction or struggle that they may have, and how these holidays and the holiday season poses challenges, some unique challenges to folks that are in their recovery and early in their recovery. And that's what we want to talk about today on the show. And with us today is Amanda Franklin. And Amanda's been with us before on the show, and she has a coaching practice in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, doing very well. And so we're going to be excited to have Amanda with us today and talk about supporting our loved ones in early recovery and what that looks like and why that's so important. So welcome back, Amanda.
Well, thank you, Bruce. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me again. And I think this time of year, it's especially important that we begin to look at how we play into the role of the family. I mean, addiction is just defined systemically, which means it kind of affects the entire family. And I think sometimes it's harder for the family member to identify how they can support, what they can do, what their role is, what they shouldn't do anymore. And especially this time of year, you know, in the clinical community, there's a lot of reference to the trifecta, the triple holiday, the Thanksgiving, the Christmas, and the New Year's. Are high times of relapse. One, because just for all of us, there's more stress, there's more anxiety, there's more pulling at our time and attention. And everyone seems to get a little more stressed out with the added pressures of the holidays. But if someone is new in their recovery, and even if someone is a little more established in their recovery, these times of year can be even more stressful and can create more opportunities for relapse, depending on where the person is at. So I just thought it would be really good to maybe talk about what that looks like from the family perspective.
Well, yeah, let's go ahead and start with that. Because as you're talking, I'm kind of, let's do a hypothetical. Let's say I'm a uncle of somebody that has recently returned from rehab, and we're at the Christmas dinner. I mean, and I know through the grapevine that Johnny's just finished rehab, but man, what do I say to Johnny? Like, how should I talk to him? Do I let him talk to me? Do I pretend he didn't go to rehab? I mean, what do I do with Johnny? Do you have any ideas like that for me?
Yeah, actually, I'm Bruce. The first thing I want to tell you is no, he can't have this one, right? You know, right. We need to be respectful that, no, they can't just have one. And I think sometimes as a family member, we don't understand that abstinence means abstinence and how hard it was for them to get to the point of sobriety to begin with. It's easy to be sober in rehab. There's nothing there to participate in, whether it's recovery from an eating disorder, chemical addictions, sex addictions, gambling, process, gaming. It's easy to manage all that when none of it's around. And then being introduced back into an environment where all the triggers are not only there, but the triggers of family might be there. And so I want to, you know, address Uncle Bruce and the rest of the family, but I always kind of laugh, you know, because a lot of people say, well, why can't they just have one? You know, the majority of the population that can manage chemicals, alcohol, you know, whatever, that aren't necessarily battling addiction can have just one. But when we're talking about those family members that can't, they can't.
And also kind of the awkwardness of just knowing, like, how, you know, give any tips possibly for family members or whatever to how to engage just in a conversation, you know, like, so how was rehab? I mean, you know, I don't really want to say that. It's like, so where you been? Just kidding. I mean, no, I'm not trying to make light of it, but, you know, there is that kind of awkwardness there. And I don't know if, you know, if you've had to coach people through that transition into their new role in the family.
Absolutely. And I would think that what I would normally advise my clients to do is to do nothing. There's a lot of shame and guilt involved. There's a lot of perceived weakness within the individual. And if they haven't worked through that, they might not be ready to talk about it. They might be in a better place to smile and nod and everybody keep the white elephant in the room for a minute. I mean, when the person is ready to talk about their recovery, they'll come to you and say, Uncle Bruce, just got out of rehab again, you know? Right. But for the meantime, we should just be able to love them as a part of our family. And I think that's the hard part, is everybody wants to focus on their recovery, the person who just got out, as opposed to just including them in the family, and which is the very thing that they're starved for. They need that connection and that love and that unconditional positive support, as opposed to, are you going to relapse today? It's Christmas Day and everybody's having wine and you've done this 100 times. I think it's important. You know, I wrote down some points here, and one of the first ones that I have written down is, do not focus on their recovery. It's not your business, for all intents and purposes. It doesn't mean we can't be supportive and we can't love them through the process. But unless we've experienced recovery, we really don't have too much in the way of experience to offer them. And it's such an individualized journey. And there's so many opinions out there, right? This doctor has this theory and this therapist has this one. And, you know, this fellowship has this and church says this. And everybody has to find their own path to recovery. And it can be really confusing when you've got 20 people giving you 20 different pieces of advice and information, and they're not learning to trust their own voice. It's real important to give them the dignity that they deserve to make their own mistakes and to learn from them. And too often we want to rob them of that for our own reasons. And this is why I think it's important to talk about the family recovery.
Exactly. And so it's like you said, it can be a very awkward time, and certainly having family members being patient and letting that person talk about their experience if they want to, but also kind of have this kind of agape love for that person, your family, because they're in their family, not because of what they're doing. Or, so what are you up to? Oh, you're in rehab. Well, Jane is in National Honor Society or whatever. It's like, ah, you know, where they kind of compare the kids or whatever, you know what I mean? And I think some families get so stuck on performance, right? What have you been up to? What are you doing? Are you producing anything? I mean, I know it sounds kind of old school, but you know what I'm okay.
I think a lot of families are focused on what accomplishments we are achieving, as opposed to, are you okay? Is your soul happy? Is your heart smiling? Right? Do you have peace going on inside of you?
I'm so glad to see you. Yeah. It's glad that you're here.
Yeah.
So glad to see you.
Alive today, which is a miracle for those families that are in the thick of addiction right now.
Right.
The fact that your family member is there and functioning and sober that day is a flat out miracle. And there's no other way that I know how to describe it. I know family members will say, well, they just need to stop and put it down. You know, I'm of the personal mindset that choice has been taken away, that they literally do not have the choice not to use or not. And when that choice is reintroduced, we should honor that to the best of our ability. I think one of the most important points that families need to realize is that, and especially in early recovery, this person is literally reeling physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I mean, they have just lost their, usually their only coping skill in life. And that's just been removed and they don't know what to do. They don't know how to feel. They don't know how to act. They already are judging and shaming themselves endlessly. So that's why they don't need ours. Our judgment and our shame certainly add gasoline to the fire of potential relapse. And I think that that's real important for the families to know that. And we need to understand it takes almost all their energy just to fight the desire to use. You know, they might not want to wash dishes. They might not want to go out and play football with the guys, right? They might not want to be social and go Black Friday shopping. And I realize that's already passed. Or, you know, all those things. They might just be literally fighting to stay alive today. And I don't think that we understand how deep that can be in that person. And as a family, I know even with me and the people around me that I've loved, you know, I thought, okay, you were in detox for 3, 5, 7 days, or you just got out of treatment for 28 days. You should be cured. You know, I was very misinformed that this is a lifelong process. You know, when I'm working with my clients or with anyone, even in the recovery side of my life, you know, I tell family members often, we're on a 5-year journey from the moment of sobriety. Introduce relapse, we're on another 5-year journey. Like, I don't think families understand that it is a life-changing, lifetime process.
Right. And as families, many families just want this to be over with just as soon as possible. Like, okay, so when can you be back to normal? When can you do the poker game with us and we're drinking? When can you go over to the behind the shed and smoke a blunt with the just kidding, but you know what I mean? Because some family traditions do involve alcohol. Other family traditions in today's world involve drugs, like straight up, like, well, we didn't be waxed today, but we did a couple of blunts. I don't know. I got a few dab carts, and I know it sounds like, what is this guy talking about? But yet the landscape has kind of changed with here's these people's traditions. Here's this family tradition. Here's other kind of, and I want to say they're bad family traditions, like low key, like they're not good family traditions. But you know, when you're there, you're kind of faced with it. I know it's kind of an elementary thing for me to say, but truth of the matter is that person just coming in into recovery, being faced with some, you know, very high risk situations just on the chemical front, not to mention psychologically or how their self-esteem is or whatever. So it is it's a lot to prepare for folks.
Well, and I think you make a good point. I think, I'll be transparent. I'm 45. You know, I've got kids that are almost 20 and teenagers, and you know, my parents are recently deceased, but we're in, and God willing, my children don't make this same decision, but my family, my immediate family, we're in fourth generation addiction. And for the one family member to break out of this pattern of addiction, right, where it's completely normal for everybody to get idiot blackout drunk at the holiday festivities,
right,
is the normal family tradition, right?
Right?
That everybody sits around and everybody shows up with a 24 pack of beer at Christmas and there's 63, 12 packs of beer sitting around. I mean, for some of us, we grow up and that's our normal. Like, it's abnormal to not do that. And I can't imagine the pressure a person would be facing knowing that their very life is on the line, right?
Right.
And they're having to walk into this environment brand new sober, without skills, without tools. And everybody around them saying, you can have one. Come on, man. You just got back from rehab. You're fine.
You're not your drug of choice, something else.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a Coke fiend. This beer ain't going to do anything.
Yes. And I think that we need to understand that, right? Like, yeah, you went to rehab for Coke, not for alcohol. Or you just were doing heroin. You know, have a beer. Take the edge off.
Hey, right? Man, weed's legal in all these states now. I mean, just take one rip off this device here.
And in my nerdy side, I could get really nerdy and point out how the action of the brain responds equally to all the chemicals. Yeah. And that's why you'll notice even in a lot of times in early recovery, the obsession for the drug is going to be replaced for something else. For some people, it might go from heroin to weed and weed to alcohol, or alcohol to pornography, or pornography to sex, or to exercise, or to managing diet, right? That an eating disorder emerges, because it's all based in this element of control, right? When we're looking at the root of addiction, it's all based in this deep-rooted element of control, fear, shame, and a genuine starvation for connection, a genuine lack of, and I hate to say this because you look at those families where it is generational and nobody knows any different. It's just a lack of self-love. Nobody knows how to love themselves in a healthier manner in those environments. I'm not saying the environment's lacking of love,
no,
But when we're looking at the tree of fruit, that's low hanging fruit, right? And so I think it's important to talk about those things, especially as we live in a world where more and more is legalized and it becomes normal, right? And grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, kids, everybody are getting high. Let's go feast on this Thanksgiving Day or Christmas Day meal. And that's the tradition, right?
Right.
You know, as opposed to something, and I'm not big for nostalgia and I'm big on let the past go, right? But as opposed to something, you know, let's play some games. Let's build, you know, let's go build in the community. Let's go figure out how we can do some different kinds of family activities that even if everybody goes back home, what about the one person whose very life is depending on it, that they're looking at everyone and maybe even ashamed to say, I know that if I indulge in one more thing that I'm going to die. You know, I can't imagine how that would feel for that person.
Exactly. So in the work that you're doing now with the clients, is it more you assisting the client to deal with the high risk situations of the family, or are you also working with families to help nurture and be with the client that's coming out of recovery?
Well, I don't have recovery experience personally from a chemical addiction. I have recovery experience personally on the family side. And so that's where I'm able to take what I've learned and share it with others. So I work with families to help them begin to kind of identify their own patterns of thinking dependencies, right? There's a lot of codependency where addiction of any type is concerned. Even something, you know, we might like want to put an eating disorder in with an addiction necessarily, but it is the same process of the brain. It's just manifesting in a different form. And so as mom, I might be going out of my way to prepare meals that will make my daughter, you know, who's struggling with an eating disorder, very happy, but I might be harming her. I might continue to be enforcing a message that it's okay, that you don't have to be like everybody else. And so I will begin to work with families to kind of identify their patterns of thinking. Or something that I think is really big with family recovery is forgiveness. You know, everybody, I don't know about your family, but my family, we have a very fun remembrance session every holiday of the past. And sometimes it can get a little begrudging, right? When someone begins to remember. Now that's fire. That's dangerous conversation for somebody in early recovery. I think the longer someone's in recovery, they should be able to learn to develop those skills. And who am I to say when that is? But we need to be careful of those things. So let's just say, you know, Uncle Bruce, I stole $20 from you, you know, and you're going to bring that up at Thanksgiving dinner. And I'm already on edge and feeling uncomfortable anyway. And you're going to shame me. You know, one of the things that I tell the families is we got to let the past be the past. We cannot bring the past into the future and expect a different result. And so I work with families like on issues of forgiveness.
Right there.
Yeah. Resentments hold a big power over us and we don't even know. Or what if there was an affair 4 years ago as a result of the using, right?
Yeah.
And it still hurts and it may still hurt. But the reality is we're going to have to forgive it or we're going to
hold on to it.
And if you're going to hold on to it, I will often tell families, then you need to get away from them while they recover. Because their life is on the line. And if you're going to use that as a tool of control, you know, we need to address our own issues there. Because me, even in my codependency issues, I would point out the things that I had done for you, feeling like you owed me something. You know, well, I paid for rehab, so you should have a job by Tuesday paying me back, you know?
Nice.
Yeah, unaware that they're trying to stay alive because I'm so misinformed about what's actually happening as a result of the disease of addiction. So I work getting real transparent with the families. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of issues usually that go along. You know, I always feel the most hopeful when it's a young person in recovery because not as much damage is done. But if we're dealing with, you know, Uncle Bruce is the addict and he has just sent the entire family and grandma. Yeah. You know, what are you, 150 now or something like that? You just won't die, will you?
Yeah.
And he's still living with grandma and taking money from her Social Security check. And the whole family is resenting you. And you've done nothing but be in and out of jails and rehabs and you bankrupt the family and you've slept with all the other uncles' wives, you know? You were an adventurous uncle. Yeah. But that's a very common scenario. And I know you see it too. And to look at someone and for everybody to forgive that, right? And say, there's a blank slate in our family today. And we're going to let the past go. And those are some hard things to overcome. And it's not always easy to do it alone. And I don't even think it's the right way when you go about it and say, well, because I'm a Christian, I will forgive you, right? Well, because a lot of people do that.
I was right on the heels of that, like saying, well, man, you know, when you're talking about that, when you say, well, let the past be the past, and I'll bring that in the future, of course, you know, and expect a different result. But then you are kind of bringing up some spiritual principles, mm-hmm. just overall spiritual principles, not pointing a finger at any, shedding a light on anyone. I know you just did. Which we don't have time on your first show. Like, so what do you want to do? I want to help people who've been
recover from religion.
And I'm just like, crickets. Like, what? That was so funny. Like, one of the few times I've brought on a guest and I was just like stupefied because I had this whole other plane that she was going to talk about. Like, oh, it was like that hiss you're hearing now. Anyway, but okay. And all, thanks for remembering. But yeah. So how do you coach or how do you teach these principles to these family members? Like,
yeah. Well, I guess one, you have to decide, do you really love them or do you love the idea of keeping everything exactly as it is, right? Wow. Do you love them enough to let it go, right? And when I say, you know, when I pick on certain religions, I mean, I'm a letters and red girl. I know I don't sound like that to a lot of people. But there's some great spiritual principles and guidelines that teach us exactly how to forgive in those beautiful little red letters, right?
Absolutely.
The black and white ones sometimes are the ones I have a hard time with. But the letters in red are fantastic. And so, you know, we're reminded constantly, you know, turn the other cheek, turn the other cheek, up to 77 times. Now, how do I do that in my heart? How do I forget that you robbed grandma, who I love with all my heart, of everything that she has? It's an active, conscious choice that I make every day. I make the active, conscious choice that the money's already gone. Grandma's okay with it. Right. Grandma keeps giving him money. She might be enabling him to death, but grandma keeps giving him money. Who am I? And it's not even really my business to be bad about that, right? I'm inserting myself in a situation that was never mine to begin with. It was between two other people. Forgiveness is hard, right? And sometimes even in forgiveness, there can't be a continued relationship for whatever reason. It might have to be put on the back burner until there's better health for both people to come back around to where they're not continuing to do damage to each other. Because typically a lot of damage has been done by the time they reach rehab or by the time, you know, families are all involved in the process, especially when you're dealing with a multi-generational family of addiction and alcoholism. All right. There's all sorts of dysfunction that's going along with that. And we have to realize that the whole system is broken and we got to start over.
Yeah, I know. And some this time of year for the other arm of my practice where people have been molesters or, finished their term in prison as a sex offender. And now they're out. You know what I mean? That person's molested somebody in the family. I mean, that's for some people, that's a game changer. Like, no way, you know, but it's a similar process.
Yeah, I mean, forgiveness is forgiveness, but I'm not going to let a child molester around my children. I mean, like, you can go be forgiven someplace else. Those are my boundaries, though, right? That's just me. And I know you're looking at me like, wow.
Here we go, another early termination of the show.
But anyway. That's me,
well,
right?
Well, and this is also a very tough time for a lot of people, you know, around the holidays, too. So it's funny how at this time of year, a lot of this starts to bubble to the surface. There's a lot of lonely people. And there's also a lot of people that are traumatized by this time of year by things from the past where molestation in early years of childhood may have taken place. And all of a sudden now it triggers these addictive behaviors or whatnot to follow.
I agree with you. And so I think when we begin to think about things like forgiveness, and I wasn't really planning on spending a lot of time on the topic of forgiveness, but it's a great thing. Like, how do we forgive? That's the question of time.
Isn't that the major vehicle that you leave the past in the past?
You leave the past in the past. You have to forgive it, you know? And pretty so, much, right. But, and I think that's why we need help. I think that's why people like us exist. I think even that's why churches exist. They give us practical tools to begin to walk that path of forgiveness and understanding. There's a difference between forgiveness and boundaries, though. I've forgiven a lot of people in my past and I have a lot of love for them, but I don't care if I ever really spend time with them again. I love them from my side of the street. And that's okay. I think, you know, sometimes in families we have to decide what's toxic and what's not, right?
But you're not interfacing with that other person. You're not reaching across the street. And I mean, you're still operating with dignity and respect and boundaries.
And I think if we can just keep in mind, especially where addiction is concerned, chemical kinds, their life is on the line. You know, if my son, who's 19, comes tomorrow and says, "Mom, I need to go to rehab." You know, normally at Christmas Eve, I throw a big party every year and there's alcohol at my home. I guarantee you there'd be no alcohol at my home. And if any one of my people had problems with it, they'd be on their side of the street and I would be on mine. You know, that would just be the reality of it. You know, I think, you know, that we need to kind of ask our people, what do you need right now? Regardless of what we've always done. I don't know anything about recovery. I don't know what you need. It's okay to not know. None of us go to school, except for, you know, us. in high school and college, most of us are not given living with addiction classes. And if 1 in 7 Americans right now is battling addiction, that means every family in America is touched by addiction. Yeah, at some level. Grandma, grandpa, uncle, aunt, sibling, spouse.
Right.
Every one of us has got someone who's literally fighting for their life right now. And I think that we need to begin to look at it that way. I mean, there's news all over the place to the point where we tune it out about overdoses and addictions and crisis. It's news because it's happening and it's real, not because it's inflated.
And, you know, this could be a segue or we can talk about later, but to what you're talking about, starting that conversation maybe, or, and I know you're going to talk about some videos that you have coming up in the future, but yeah, starting that conversation with families and having a lot of our discussion, I guess, involve just not the news, but also, you know, a healthier discussion, you know, about who our family identity, you know, that the family struggles or which members of the family, you know, and really kind of rallying around and supporting those individuals in our families that are maybe having a tougher time than others, you know, and honoring that. And that's just a next level kind of interaction, but anyway, but like you said, you know, particularly just coming from rehab and trying to reintegrate during the holidays is such a tough situation.
It's going to be really hard on them. And I think that we need to be understanding that sometimes they might need to go to 2 or 3 meetings a day because it's the only thing they know how to do right now to keep them from going out and using. And that might mean that they're not there to wash Christmas dinner dishes, right? That might mean that they're not, you know, as present as we want them to be, you know, and I can't say this enough to families. Rehab does not cure them, right? It is just the start. It is literally the diving board of recovery and that's it. And that's all. It does nothing else. Mm-hmm. It gives us a minute to clear our brains out. You know, I have worked in treatment facilities and I am a fan of treatment. I'm not anti-treatment. The first 2 weeks, people are walking around like zombies, right? They've spent a week in detox, which is another version of chemical hell. Right. And yeah, and I don't even think as families, we can begin to understand. And I know you've seen it and I've seen it. Someone going through that process, I mean, it'll bring you to tears watching how horrible it is.
And honestly, that psychological detox lasts for months or years, right? So yeah, we got them through the initial physical detox. So there's no withdrawal symptoms and people don't have seizures or heart collapses or whatever. But you know, that's why we have, you know, recovery meetings of 12-step meetings and other recovery meetings just to deal with that psychological aspect that, you know, for many people, they struggle with it for the rest of their lives to some degree or another. So,
and I think too, like for me, I was so resentful in the beginning of my own path of recovery. I would get jealous, like, oh, they got rehab again. I'd love to go away for 30 days, you know, these facilities now I'm good. You know, I'll take my 30 days at home. Like they're literally going through a whole different necessary, right? It's good. Don't get me wrong. But it's not what I thought it was. I thought they're going away and they're making clay cigarette ashtray things and painting all day long and doing yoga. That's not the reality of what's going on. It is a place to literally save your life. It is IU for addiction is what it is. It's critical care. And so I mean, there might be some brand new physical sobriety going on, but I think anyone in this industry would let family know that that has nothing to do with it, right? The problem is not the chemical. The problem is the soul and the mind and the heart.
So Justin, just curious from the millennial lens out there, any kind of nuances that you see that we're not picking up on as
old people?
Right.
Oh, well, I would just add the social aspect of social media and the impact it has on not rehab necessarily, but just the influence that social media has on social norms. That would be my biggest thing to point out. And again, my apologies. I know I came in a little bit late here, so I didn't catch the first part of this, but based on what I heard so far, that's what I would add.
Well, if you could elaborate on that further, just in terms of the utilization of social media or how the person portrays himself or the family portrays them, what might be some of your thoughts on the impact of social media?
So social media is basically because it's so pervasive right now. For example, it's cool to, like what I remember when I was in school, it's cool to drink or it's cool to, I don't know, do drugs. Like that still exists. I'll give you another example. And this I see a lot with women doing the boomerang with their wine glasses on Instagram, right? Like that is becoming the social norm. So because it's so pervasive, it's almost like part of the detox, I guess, needs to be the social media detox too, as part of the process. That's what I'm seeing from a millennial generation. I think for millennials, any millennial that would be going through that, I think that's going to be a key component to their recovery process.
I think that's a great point, right? And the reality is, you know, Bruce does this, I do this all day long, and many other professionals. Life was not working, right? Or you wouldn't have ended up in rehab. And when life needs to be reconstructed, that might include we have to ditch the social media for a while or permanently, especially if you're, you know, your addiction is a sexual nature, right? You know, I have the most respect when I look at people who are walking around with flip phones, protecting themselves from those elements, right? That this element is dangerous to my recovery. So I'm going to limit access to it. And I think that we think something as simple as that is not dangerous, and it is real dangerous.
I mean, thanks for bringing that up, Justin, because I have a ton of millennial and now what Gen Zs that they come out of rehab, they get their phone back and their phone had Snapchat on it. They didn't get a new phone number. So every drug dealer has a Snap story. I've got this. And it's literally like porn for drugs.
Well, And that's my point with this is the detox. I love that you said the detox and the treatment center is just the beginning or the launching pad. But I really see that's a key element. I think, you know, older generation probably doesn't, you know, not as active on social media or with their phone. But that to me, obviously, Bruce, you know, I have a loved one that went through this process. And the first thing that they took away from her for the first, I think it was 2 weeks, was her phone. So I think that is for the millennial and Gen Z generations, that is going to be a key component is learning to cope and learning control techniques, self-discipline techniques with their phone, because that's really where all this stuff is rampant now and where a lot of the millennials are spending all their time on social media. You know, it's not necessarily, oh, I'm going to a concert or I'm going to a rave, you know. Eliminating that, I think, is probably pretty easy for a lot of those folks. But when you're on social media all day and you see pictures of people, you know, cheersing and having fun, I think that, from what I understand, again, from the loved ones I know, that was a big trigger for them.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that it's important to kind of point out, you know, there's a great speaker and he talks about that this is a disease of perception, right? And it's those perceptions of, oh, I'm not out having as much fun. Or, you know, I've been sober for 90 days now. and I should be able to go out and have one brunch, right? Or did you call them just in the wine moms, right? Like, it's super easy to say, oh, I just got a DWI because I had too much wine that night, but it's been sober 90 days. I've proven that I'm not an alcoholic. And I see all my friends out having fun, and my perception is I'm missing out, right? And that fear of missing out is going to lead my brain down a path that says I can do something that I can't, because the addicted brain is going to constantly lie to me and say I can have more, because the reward center is screaming for it, like when we're looking at it in a biological perspective. But the family member, right? So let's just say I'm the mom and I see my daughter, you know, experiencing this. And I want to make one more point real quick. If your kid's in rehab and they're telling you that they're getting mistreated and they need to bring me the phone, that's what every kid says. Okay. Like, they want their phone. The reason why that there is a limited contact is because the drug dealers will bring drugs to the rehab posed as somebody. How are they finding out where they're at? Because they have access to their phones, to their Snapchat, to their WhatsApp. What is it called? WhatsApp. Yeah. You can tell I'm real in the loop. You're like, you're learning, huh? You know, three of them now. And so I think it's real important that, you know, we're seeing a different type of recovery situation come in with the millennials. The parents are wanting to cater to these kids, which has been a problem. And why can't they have their phone? Well, I need to get a hold of them. You know, all these kind of things.
Helicopter parents.
Yeah. And the family needs to back off and trust the professional. Yeah.
Pathologically codependent. Yeah. Lawnmower parents.
Unbelievably codependent. Right. And we don't want my kid to be uncomfortable, and I don't need his feelings hurt. Well, maybe somebody needs to.
She meant to say Gen Z, Justin. So don't, no worries.
I mean, all of them, all of them under me. That's what I mean.
We forget how mature these millennials are now, man. They're our next door neighbors, and they're. So, but nothing is that teach rehab centers. And I know a part of my work is I teach people to use social media constructively. There's a crap ton of sober Instagram groups, and they follow the same hashtags, and they post up memes, good memes, every 30 minutes. And so these people can actually fiend on their recovery. Anyway, so they're still, actively involved. Now, Instagram is good. Facebook is good. There's different sober meetups and those things, like you said. But you have to take the initiative to get rid of the bad people that you were following that are going to be on your news feed. And then Snapchat is still the manhole cover to hell. Because it's just, I always tell, just get a new phone number. And that way, actually, another, abandon Snap altogether until you have a foothold on, 6 months into your recovery, and then be very careful, because Snapchat now has algorithms and friends, like all your drug dealers' friends will come up as quick ads. And I mean, and I, of course, me, I always have a few sketchy people laying around.
but that's on purpose, right, Bruce?
Yeah.
I can stay in the know. I gotta stay up to date.
But God, I was on my Snapchat, and my Snapchat is clean as a whistle, boy. I just, here's the dog, and I'm good for 24 hours, and that's my Snap story to the public. You know what I mean? And don't really get too many DMs or blowback. But man, I'll see all these people that on the quick ads that are kind of friends and associates, and round one and two from these other not so savory individuals. I'm like, dang. I mean, bro, I looked at these characters, emojis that they have. I mean, it was like, what, with the dollar signs in their eyes? You know what I mean? Just straight up dealers. Anyway, but
I think one thing for the family to understand is I don't want the mom and dad out there to start monitoring your 22-year-old's social media, right? This is the accountability of recovery, and in recovery, we have to learn to manage it ourselves. Mom and dad, if my kid is 22 and I'm checking their Snapchat, something's wrong with me, right? And not only that, I'm enabling them. I'm robbing them of the opportunity to learn their lesson. The setback, the relapse, cause sometimes people say relapse is a part of recovery. And to a degree, it is. And we're going to have to be okay with that, too. I'm trying not to be a naysayer, but I have never seen one person that said, today I'm going to be sober. And woo, they were magically sober, right? I've seen people talk about it for years and practice it for years before something finally happened for it to take.
Right.
And that's just the progression of it.
Well, I know we got 10 minutes left in the show, and that's good stuff there. And I did want to Now, I want to carve out some time to talk about some of your ideas for the future. I think that's really, I want to hear, want to hear about that. It's exciting for our listeners and for me and Justin to kind of hear, what some of your thoughts are. I know you've been, how long have you been coaching now? How long has it been since? Okay. 2 years. Wow. Seems like yesterday you went through OC. Yeah. And so I'm just happy you're welcome. I encouraged her to get the, I said, you know what? After I saw Amanda's LinkedIn and some of her, just her presence, you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, you're going to have a coaching practice quicker than I did. And she's like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And it availed itself. So anyway,
prophet Bruce.
I have the gift of prophet.
One of the things in my practice, obviously I'm passionate about recovery and family healing. And I don't care what language we call it. You know, the whole world is in recovery. If every one of us has basically been impacted by this disease, and every one of us has, then we all need to be understanding and learning and growing. And so I began, and I see all the time a need for resources, right? Most people don't have access to pay for a coach, to pay for a therapist. Mental health services are the most needed and least accessible in the United States. Texas being 50th on that state. So I kind of spend some time in prayer and meditation. Yes, I do pray. and I began to kind of just wonder, how can I take all this amazing information that's been afforded me, and how can I expose the people that I have the most respect for in the field? So what I created, and it's still in the creation stage, the Facebook and Instagram pages are up, but it's called Recovery for the Rest of Us. So if you go to Facebook, you can just search in Recovery for the Rest of Us. There's an Instagram page. I just started that one last Sunday because I'm not as social media savvy as these younger generations, and two is my limit. It's just too much. I got real stuff to do.
That is real stuff. Okay, but go ahead.
And so what we've done is we're creating a YouTube channel, and the first series of videos should be out by the 1st of January, but we're going to outline, I've got one of the best psychiatrists that I've ever met, who's also in a 20-year recovery from his own addiction, who's going to explain like what happens in the brain, right? What is the detox process like? You know, just as a way to educate the family, this is what's going to happen. Because I was so confused. Like every time one of my loved people went off to detox and they came back 3 days later, why are they not fixed? And why do they not have a job? And why are they crying all day long? They're so weak, right? And so we're really going to create some dialogue around that. We're going to kind of outline what's codependency. What's enabling? How do we set boundaries? How do we deal with the guilt of setting boundaries, right? There's nothing harder than saying no to our kid who's manipulating us endlessly, right? And so that's going to be a YouTube channel also called Recovery for the Rest of Us, but there's nothing on it today.
Is that going to be monetized, or is this just a resource for people?
It's a resource for people. God, I would never charge people for anything like this. No. I mean, I think that it is my gift, you know, and maybe Bruce, I'll get you on the show at some
point. There we go. A little cameo.
Yeah. We'll get Bruce on my show now. But there's already a support page with a lot of active members, you know, where you can go and say, hey, my kid is experiencing this. And that group is full of other mental health professionals, other parents and family members and loved ones that are, you know, like, hey, I'm kind of at a loss here. As well as people who are in recovery on themselves, kind of guiding us. And so it's just a place, not only just for addiction, though. You know, there's so many other mental health issues that go along with it. What if my daughter is just struggling from anxiety and I don't have tools, you know, or things along those lines? So it's great.
Videos for different.
Yeah, we'll have videos up on anxiety, mental health, eating disorders. You know, I want to spend a lot of time with eating disorders because that's on the rise. We're going to have topics about suicide. You know, what do we do when they're threatening suicide again? And it scares me to death.
And I
give in because I don't want them to kill themselves. You know, how do you deal with all that? This is heavy stuff.
Very heavy
and
stuff.
So Recovery for the Rest of Us. And I'm super excited about that. But I think on one last little note, I think the best thing that we can do is begin to recover ourselves. You know, I'll never forget. And I'm a recovery person. I put that out there. You know, when I read a line in a book that's blue that said, you know, changed attitudes can aid recovery, right? Well, I didn't know what a changed attitude was. And I didn't know what recovery was, right? And I went and surrounded myself with people that brought a better life to me, regardless of what those around me are doing, you know? And that's ultimately what I think we're all trying to do, is find a little bit more joy in life and peace.
Serenity.
Serenity now.
All right.
Yeah, it's festive season, right? It is. The young kids aren't going to know what that is all. Yeah.
No. Yeah. But be at peace and then comfortable in our own skin, and be there as a facilitator to help others be comfortable in their skin, you know, and man, it's easier said than done. And having that versatility, but also those principles by which we interact with people and support people and love on people. And even as coaches, right, we do that. We provide, we have good tools, good accountability, and some good nudging toward positive thinking and removing those self-limiting, you know, we go back to square one with coaching school about removing self-limiting beliefs. Well, man, those are the very things that fueled the addiction or fueled the psychiatric syndrome in the first place, and being able to get around that can produce change. That's why cognitive behavior therapy was such a game changer in the late 80s and early 90s, because people say, you mean if I change the way I think, I won't be mentally ill? Like, well, depending on the mentally ill, you can't outthink schizophrenia, but most of the time, right. No, but for many things, it was good. So they tried it for everything, and it made some good adjustments. And now we're just now, you know, 100,000 years later with brain scans and other imagery and other techniques, we're starting to understand addiction a little bit better. I know, as long as I've been in this game, it seems like it's just the same shit, different day, you know, year after year. And but it seems like there are some new grounds being broken to understanding, particularly with the neuroscience and the imaging and some of the really actually some. And I'm not a medicinal person per se, but some of the interesting cocktails with the gabapentin and other Vivitrol and all those.
I think that's important, right? Because there's going to be a lot of people with a lot of opinions. You know, some of my most favorite people have needed step down tools in their addiction. And who am I to say what's right for them and who's not, right? And I think that we have to be open minded. And I think that it's just real important. I don't know what they need, and I have to swallow that pill.
Or as a coach, we help them. We help them find out what they.
Talking about the family. Family member. Yeah, as the coach, we do different things. But as the family member. But I think, like in my coaching practice, even. You know, I think that's why I landed on personal development, because it is so personal, and each person's going to have their own history, traumas to overcome, you know, family to overcome, right? And so, thank you for letting me be here.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and so great to see you in this space, and, you know, seeing you with your practice, with your thriving practice. And you're really doing some good vision casting and forward looking to this YouTube channel, which isn't going to be monetized. So you betcha, I'll be one of your, you know, count me in, us in. I'll speak for Justin on this anyway. But
absolutely.
Yes, and we count us in. We'll do whatever we can to help that effort. And so just so glad to see how things are coming along for you. You know what I mean? From where you began with this process. I just love it. So, and Amanda, how can folks access you and reach you?
Oh, they can find me at my website, which is afranklincoaching, .com. And then you can always go to the Recovery for the Rest of Us Facebook page. And I love, and there's a group. So join both.
Instagram
at Recovery for the Rest of Us.
Right.
And yeah.
A. Franklin has
one. And A. Franklin has an Instagram too. Yeah. They're very different, but they're all the same. Yeah. But,
and she, you know, and she's done a great job with A. Franklin. That's on my feed. And I haven't seen that. Anyway. Oh, you did it? Okay. I have to log in. She does. Okay. Okay. Love right now. Well, it's all about it. So, all right then. And folks, you know, thanks for listening to the show today, and come by and see us, Concierge Coaches Show. We're on Apple Podcasts now. And we are on iHeartRadio somehow. Justin, I found us on iHeartRadio. So that was fun that we got picked up.
Right.
We're so marvelous. And we got picked up by them without our knowing. And what else? See us on social media, on Facebook, Concierge Coaches Show, The Concierge Coaches on Instagram and LinkedIn. And Justin, how can folks reach you?
My website, which is Nimmergood, which is my last name.com. Great show today. Thanks for being on with us.
Thanks, Justin.
Yeah. Thanks. Good to have you come in there and give us your perspective, because that's the perspective of the future, baby. You know that.
Well, so. Plus he saved us from a very controversial topic. Yeah. I didn't even know he was there, and he popped right in
before we went to the deep end. That was good. Good timing. Justin's good. He saved us again.
Thank you, Justin.
So, all righty then. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great week, and we'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. And check us out then. We'll have another exciting show for you. So until then, have a blessed week, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.